The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
And Yitzchok was 40 years old when he took Rivka, the son of Bisuel, for a wife. And Yitzchok was mispalel, he prayed to Hashem and his wife, because she was an akore, she was barren. And Hashem answered him, and Rivka, his wife, conceived. She became pregnant with twins, two sons. And there was a great struggle, a great turbulence in carrying these two. And she said, if this is the case, why did I need all of this? And she went to seek out the word of Hashem. Rashi tells us she went to the Beis HaMedrash of Shem. And Hashem said to her, there are two nations in your womb, and two great empires will separate themselves from your womb. And one will draw its strength from the other, and the older one will serve the younger one. And when it came time for her to give birth, there were twins, and the first one came out, he went out, and he was red, and he was complete. He was complete with a covering of hair, like a garment. And they called his name Esav, and then his brother went out, and his hand was holding on to the heel of Esav, and therefore they called him Yaakov, which means from the word heel. Yitzchok ben Shishim Shana v'ledes Esav. And Yitzchok was 60 years old when she gave birth to them. And the children grew up, and Esav was a man of the hunt, a man of the field, and Yaakov was a man who was very upright and straight, Yeshev Olim, who would dwell in the tents. Bayav Yitzchok as Esav Kitzai Befiv, and Yitzchok loved Esav because he would bring hunt to his mouth. Rivka Eves is Yaakov, and Rivka loved Yaakov. Then the Torah continues to tell us that one day Esav came from the field and he was very hungry, and he was weak from hunger, and he asked Yaakov to give him something to eat. And Yaakov said, I will, but sell to me your birthright, your right of the firstborn. And Esav said, yes, what do I need it for? So he sold to Yaakov his right of the firstborn. Then the Torah tells us, in later on in the parasha, in Parashat Chof Zayin, Vayiki Zokin Yitzchok Vatichena Eino Mereis. When Yitzchok became old and his eyes became weak from seeing, he called Esav his older son and he said, Hineno zakanti leyadati yemesi, I am old and I do not know the day of my death. Now you go and take your weapons with you, your bow and your arrow, and go out to the field and catch for me some hunt and make for me the type of food which you know I like, bring it to me and I will eat, in order that I can bless you before I die. Rivka Shemaz Bidaber Yitzchok Esav. Rivka heard all of this. And as Esav went out, so Rivka said to Yaakov, her son, I heard that your father wants to give the blessings, the broches. These were the broches of Avraham, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Avraham, and Avraham gave when he said, Lech Locha Me'artzicha, and by the Akedah Yitzchok, where Yana shared, Asisa Sadovarazeh, because you did this, I will make you your seed the greatest of all nations, and you will be blessed from all nations. And all of the families of the world will be blessed because of you. And your seed will be multiplied. Kafaro Oritz, like the dust of the sand, like the dust of the earth. And Kekech V'Ashomayim, like the stars of the heaven. So when Rivka heard this, that he was going to give all of these brochas to Esav, so she told Yaakov, now listen to what I tell you and what I will be Matzava Esav, which I will command you. Go to the sheep and bring two goats and young goats, good ones, and I will make them into the type of food that your father loves. And bring it to your father and let him eat, in order that he should bless you before he dies. And then Yaakov said, but Esav ochi ish soyer, v'neich ish cholok. Esav is very hairy, rough skinned, and I'm very smooth skinned. And if my father will feel me, he'll know who I am. And instead of a brocha, I will bring a curse. His mother said, I will accept that curse. You do and listen to what I say. So he did this, and he came to Yitzchok, and when he came to Yitzchok, Yitzchok was a little surprised. Why is it that you have come so quickly? And then he might have suspected something, so he said, come here that I might feel you. Meanwhile, Rivka had given Yaakov some skins to cover his arms with, and also he gave to Yaakov, Vatichkach Rivka es bigdei Esav b'no hagod lachamudis hasheita baboyis. She gave him the precious clothing which Esav used to keep in trust by his mother. She put this on Yaakov, and because of all of this, so he deceived his father Yitzchok, and Yitzchok blessed him by Vorachehu. He gave him all of the brochas. As he left, Esav came. Vayemele Yitzchok Ovi, mi ota vayema ani bincha v'chorch Esav, who are you? And he said that I am your firstborn Esav. Vayecharad Yitzchok harode gedola ad miod. And when Yitzchok heard this, he trembled with a great, great fear. And the Chazal bring Ro Piskur Shil Gehenim. He saw Gehenim open in front of him. He said, if that's the case, so who is this that came before you and that gave me food and that I gave him the brochas? Ba'avorachehu, gam boruch yiyah, let him be blessed. And when Esav heard this, he said, Barachini gam oni ovi, bless me also. He said, how can I bless you when I have given everything that belongs to you, I've given to your brother? I said that he shall be the gvir, he shall be the master over you. So everything that you have is already given to him. And Esav kept pressing and wailing and whatnot, till finally, Yan Yitzchok, and he said, and he gave Esav also some brochas. And included in those brochas is Baal Charbacho Tichya, that you shall live by the sword. Now we have discussed this parsha, which is basically the entire theme of the parsha, the major theme of the parsha, many times before. But since this is something which is so fundamental and so important to Klal Yisrael and to our entire emunah and tradition, let's discuss it once again. Now we can ask here four questions. We know that Esav was a Rosh HaGomor. He was the ultimate of evil. Like the Chazal tell us, he was a Sheikh Kedom. He was a murderer. Al Kharb Khotithya. He and his generations, they lived by the sword. And the fact is, the Chazal tell us that states, we read that when he was born, so he was born Admeni. He was red. So the Chazal say, Simin the Sheikh Dam. This is a sign of blood. When he came from the field and he was hungry and he was willing to sell his birthright for something to eat, so the sages tell us he was hungry and he was fatigued because on that day he had committed Shfichas Domim, he had killed. And on that day also he had committed Gila Arois, acts of adultery. Also, later on, it states that when he was 40 years old, he took a wife. Vayehi Esav, this is in Rashi's Chovov, Posuk Lamed Aleph. Yesav ben Avoyim Shonav, Vayikach Isha Es Yehudis Bas Beri Achiti, Ves Bosmas Bas Eden Achiti. When Esav was 40, he took two wives. Vatiyena Moras Ruach L'Yitzchok L'Rivko. They were of great sorrow and aggravation to Yitzchok and to Rivka, because these two wives were idolatrous. And why at 40? Because he said, my father married at 40. Yitzchok was 40 years old when he married Rivka. So therefore, I also will marry at 40. So the Chazal say, look at the distortion. Look at the duplicity of Esav. Because Kol mem shono hoye Esav tzod nashi mitachas yad ba'alehen. For his 40 years, Esav would steal wives from beneath their husbands. U'ma'ana Esav. And violate them. And now when he's 40 years old, he says, my father married at 40, therefore I also will marry at 40. So we see that he was heavily involved in Gila Arayis, an act of immorality. We see that he was a kafir bi'ikar. He denied the existence of Hashem. Because when Yaakov said, sell to me my birthright, so he said, what is it? So Yaakov explained that this is a right to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and through this you'll have much reward in the next world. And to that Esav answered, Hinei anechi heilech lomus. Next world. I'm going to die in this world. There won't be a next world. V'loma li ze becheira. Loma ze li becheira. So what do I need it for? So the Chazal bring from here that he was a kefir beaker. He denied the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He denied the existence of the next world. So Esav and his generations, his seed, were reshoim to the ultimate. If that's the case, so why does it say that Yitzchok loved Esav? How could he love a person like that? Yaakov, on the other hand, was the Bechir Sheba Oves. He became the most perfect of the Oves of Avram, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. He was the culmination and the perfection of them. And he was the most perfect of all men. States that Surasi Shul Yaakov Avinu Chokuk Al Kisi Yaakovit, that the image of Yaakov is hewed out on the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This was the perfection he had reached. Now, if this was Yaakov and this was Esav, how was it possible? Was Yitzchok so naive that he could love Esav more than Yaakov? And especially it states he loved, one of the reasons why he loved Esav, Kitzayit the thief, because he would bring him food from the field. This doesn't seem to make to be too logical. Yitzchok was the Eile Temima. He came to tremendous heights in serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to the point where he was an Eile Temima. He had sacrificed, offered to himself for a sacrifice. Niskadesh, and he was sanctified. In this parsha, when Rivka did not bear a child, he was mishpalo to Hashem. So the sages asked, why didn't he take a shivcha? Why didn't he take one of the maidservants, like Sarah did, gave to Avraham, or like Rachel will do by Yaakov? So the answer was, is because he had a kedusha yisera, he had a greater element of kedusha, because he was niskadesh by Har Moriah. He was sanctified on the mountain of Moriah when he was offered for a sacrifice. So what does it mean that he chose Esav over Yaakov because of these reasons? The second question, he went further. Not only did he love Esav more, but he was willing to give the brochas to Esav. How could he give these brochas to Esav? These were the brochas which were given to Abraham when he was told, Lech Lecha Me'atzecha, go out of your land. Or when he was told, Lech Lecha, go to the land, to the mountain which I will show you. And these brochas, all of the success of Klal Yisrael is dependent on them. And had these brochas gone to Esav and to his seed, then Yisrael would not be the chosen people. And they would not be the blessed nation from all of the world. And Vilna Gaon writes this in his Pirush to the Haggadah. It was a tremendous responsibility, these brochas. Then how was it possible that Yitzchok should want to give these brochas to Esav? A third question. Once he decided that he should give these brochas to Esav, evidently he had seen something in Esav over Yaakov. So then why, when he realized that Yaakov deceived him, and he said to Esav, who's this that came before you? Why did he say, Gam Boruch Yeh, let him be blessed? At one hand it states, Vayecharad, Charod Gedol Ad Mi'od, he became afraid with great fear and trembled because he saw the Gehenna open up in front of him. He felt he gave the brochas to the wrong people, to the wrong person. And now he says, Gam Boruch Yeh, let him be Boruch, let him be blessed. Why all of a sudden was he Chesed? Why so quickly did he change his mind? And thirdly, and fourthly, then Esav wanted a brocha. So one of the brochas he gives Esav, Al Chad B'Chotichya, you should live by the sword. If he saw in Esav that Esav was a Shefech Dam, if he saw in Esav that Esav was a killer, and that's why he's giving him this brocha, Al Chad B'Chotichya, you should live by the sword, then why was he so willing just a few minutes before to give him the brochas? So we have these four great questions. That how could he love Esav more than Yitzchok? How could he go so far as to be willing to give the brochas to Esav? The Birchas Avraham Avinu. Thirdly, why all of a sudden, when he found out that Yaakov deceived him, he changed his mind and he said, Gam Boruch Yeh, let him be blessed. And fourthly, when he finally found some brochas for Esav, he said, Al Chabu Chotichya, you live by the sword, you'll be a killer. If he saw in Esav that he would be a killer, so why was he willing to be mevorech him, to bless him? To understand this, we first must understand it's two principles. We're accustomed to thinking that Esav actually is probably the strongest source of anti-Semitism in the world. Because the sages tell us, Halocha she'Esav seinei es Yaakov. It's a halocha, it's a fact that Esav hates Yaakov. And the greatest acts of anti-Semitism throughout all of history came from the Zera of Esav. So what a custom of to think that Esav, being this Shefet Dam, Umegal Arayis, even Averizora, where he involved himself in Kol Averis Shebetera, that he was someone, a very insignificant, lowly person. Not so. Esav had powers and abilities and talents and potential that reached Adrumei Shalelot, the greatest heights of the world. He was a giant. And so was Yaakov. Yaakov also had powers and abilities and talents that reached to the highest heights in the world. Both of these two sons of Yitzchok were blessed with the greatest and the most magnificent and gigantic powers and brochas that one could wish for. And this, that Esav became what he did become, that was through his own mechira, that was through his own choice. But these brochas and these powers he had. That's the first principle. The second principle is that these two brothers, these two twins, were total and complete antithesis, opposites to each other. Exactly the opposite of each other. This is brought out in the Posuk. That when Rivka went to the Beis HaMedrash of Shem to ask what's going on, so the answer came, Shnei goyim bevitneich. These are not two sons merely, two children that you're carrying. Shnei goyim bevitneich. These are two nations. Two nations. And then the Chazal bring, the Rashi brings, it's not written goyim. The vov is not here, but it's written geim. Geim from the word goeah means nobility, aristocracy. Not only are they two nations, but two nations of great aristocracy. Two mighty noble nations. And the Gemara in Avodah Zarah Rashi brings, gives an example, Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Aleph, Elu Antinenis Berebi, a descendant. The greatest nation that came from Esav was Romi, the Roman Empire. And one of the great kings of the Romans was Antinonis. And he lived at the same time as Rebbe, as Rebbe Yehuda Nosi, who at that time was the king, the Nosi of Klal Yisrael. And they were colleagues together. Shelei posku me'al shulchonam leitzein velechazeres lebi meisacham velei meisakshomim. And both of them were great aristocrats. And on their tables, they never lacked fresh vegetables, known as chazeres, radishes or lettuce. Not in the summertime and not in the wintertime. Now this was a great achievement. Because in those days, they didn't have the technical equipment that we have for shipping or for preserving. So to have fresh vegetables on your table every day, winter or summer, this was a very great achievement. And the Maral explains, what does this represent? Do people enjoy so much eating fresh vegetables that are more tasty delicacies? This represented wealth. This represented nobility. That their table was set every day with the freshest of vegetables, even in the middle of the cold winters, or it had to be shipped from some other country. So first she was told, these are not children, but these are nations. And not only are they regular nations, but geim, nations of great nobility and aristocracy. Ushnei le'umim. And not only are they nations, but le'umim. Le'umim means malchus, kingdoms, great kingdoms. And then, it states, mimeayich yiporedu. When they are born, they will go in separate directions. This is telling us the principle that they were the antithesis of each other. Now they are together. But from the moment of birth, they will go in opposite directions. Ula'om milayim yemots. And one will draw its strength from the other. The Targum says, Malku mi Malku yiskaf. One kingdom will draw its strength from the other. La yishvu bigduloso. They will never be both at their peak at the same time. Kishezeh kom, zeh nofa. When one rises, the other will fall. And when the other rises, this one will fall. Rashi brings, that's what the Chazal tell us, le'niv netzur ela mechrubonei shel Yerushalayim. The capital of the Roman Empire and the capital of Klal Yisrael Yerushalayim will never be rebuilt at the same time. When Rome flourishes, Yerushalayim will be in destruction. And when Yerushalayim flourishes, Rome will be in destruction. Malku mi malku yiskuf yiskaf ula'im milayim yemots. And in the end of days, v'rav yavei tzoir. The older one will become subjected to the younger one. La yishvu bigdulosam, they can never be equal because they are opposite. This was the nevuah which was given to Rivka. And this is what is meant by Yisraitzatzu Habonim, why there was such Ritzus Habonim. There was such turbulence inside of Rivka's womb. So firstly, we must understand these two principles, and we're not speaking here about two kids that were born. We're speaking here of gigantic people. Both of them. Torah didn't come and say that Yaakov is going to be a nation. Yaakov is going to be powerful. Shnei goyim. These are not children, but these are nations. And geim, what kind of nations? There's all types of nations. There are nations that live in the jungles. There are nations that live in the swamps. There are nations that live in the deserts. Okay? Not these nations. Geim, these will be the type of nations that their tables will be laden with the freshest of vegetables every day, who are very particular about their honor, who are very particular about their nobility. And they will be kingdoms, but they will never be the same. One will draw its strength from the other. Now, if they both had such great powers and potential, but they were different, then how were they different? And this the Chazal tell us, by Yisrotzu Sahabonim, when they were fighting, so the Chazal bring, Misreitzu Simze Imze Umeirivim Banach Leshnei Elamesh. They were fighting, this was their nature, before they were born, to conquer both worlds. What does this mean? Maral explains. Esav was given mighty powers by nature to perfect this world, to bring this world to its ultimate perfection. Yaakov was given mighty powers by nature to perfect the next world. But Yaakov wanted both worlds. It's the nature of a person coming into this world where he wants everything. And Esav wanted both worlds. So that is what is meant, Umeirivin benach l'shnei olamos. Where the quarrel was, each one wanted both worlds. So we see that Esav was given powers for this world. And Yaakov, powers of the spiritual world. Had Esav used his powers appropriately, then together with Yaakov, there would have been the perfection of this world and the next world. The Midrash tells us that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he created great kingdoms. And all of these kingdoms were for the purpose of bringing kovod, honor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But because of their own choice, many of these kingdoms brought dishonor, brought destruction to the world. But this was Esau's ability and power and choice. Now, to be a little more explicit, the Torah tells us, "Vayigdul anorim." They grew up. Before then, it wasn't so recognizable as to the ways they would go. But now that they grew up, we could tell which way they were headed. "Vayi Esav ish deyatzaid ish soder." Esav was a man who knew how to hunt, and he was a man of the field. And Yaakov was an upright person, a dweller of the tents. Since Esau's powers lied in the physical world, and he was not pursuing the path which he could have to uplift the physical world to perfection, so therefore he was nimshach, he was drawn after the physical world with all of its shortcomings. And therefore the Torah tells us, Esav was an ish yedei atzaid, he was a man of the hunt, ish soder, a man of the field. Rashi states, you can learn two ways. He was a man of the hunt, which means he liked to hunt. He knew the ways of this world. Isoder, a man of the field. This represents this world. And then Rashi tells us, also it means Yedei Atzaid, Lotzu L'Rames Es Ovi B'Thiv. He knew how to deceive his father with his mouth. When you hunt, it's an act of deception, because you're deceiving the animal. You make the animal think that he is a good bait, and you wait for him. Then you spring on him. It's an act of deception. Esav was a good hunter. Not only was a good hunter physically, he was a good hunter when it came to deceive his father. Lotzei d'l'rames es ovi b'fif. How did he deceive his father? V'she'alai. Abba heyach ma'asrin es ha'melech v'esateven. He would ask his father all kind of shilas, legal questions. You're supposed to give one-tenth away of your food, which is supposed to be Kodesh sanctified. Are you also obligated to do that with salt? Is salt also considered a food? What about the tavern, straw? Is that also considered a food which you're obligated to give a tenth on? It's a good question. It's very good questions. So far, Oviv Shu Medaktik Mitzvahs. So his father thought, he's a Medaktik Mitzvahs, he's a tzaddik. He's a very righteous person, very careful person when it comes to halacha. Now from here we see a profound insight. Esav was a master of deception. He was a liar. And incidentally, this is how Rashi explains why did Yitzchok love Esav more? Kitzayit b'fiv. Doesn't refer that he used to bring him good food. Yitzchok was that naive. But Tzayit b'fiv, because Yitzchok fell into the hands, he fell into the mouth of Esav. Esav deceived him, since Esav was such a master of deception. He deceived him into thinking that he was a great righteous person. Now this is very profound. Two things we see. He was a liar, and he was a Baal Hanufa, a flatterer, duplicity. How did he use his lies to represent a duplicity? His father thought he projected an image of a tzaddik, while really he was a rosha. This is what the Torah tells us later. His father got married at 40. Therefore, he also got married at 40 to project an image of being a tzaddik like his father, even though he was a rosha. The entire 40 years he would go and steal wives from their husbands. Now this is the midah, the quality of olam hazeh, of the physical world. When the physical world is detached from the spiritual world, because this world is called Alma de Shikra, the world of falsehood. It distorts the images. A person cannot see this oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. The word world, olam, is from the Hebrew word haloma, to conceal, which means that in this world there's a power to conceal the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why it's called olam. On that day when the world to come, or the Melech HaMashiach will come and all will be clarified, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be one. Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be one. But in this day, as long as there's the powers of the physical world, you cannot see clearly the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He and His name is not one. That's the power of this world. The power to distort and the power of duplicity, where it breaks the achdus, the singleness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if Esav was drawn entirely to the physical world, then Esav also had these qualities. And therefore, Tzayir b'fiv. He was a great hunter. The Gemara tells us, Dalit kitei seidem mekablim pnei ashchina. There are four groups that will not merit the radiance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. because they are contrary to Hashem. And two of those groups are the Kat Davidish Korim, the Kat Hanufim, those that speak falsehoods and those that flatter, because this is opposite to Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, and he's the ultimate of one. So how is it possible that someone who constantly lies, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chais Me Emes, his seal is truth, how is it possible that he should identify with Hashem? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one, the opposite of all duplicity. And Hanufa, the quality to flatter, in other words, to try to present one image when a person is really something else, this is the opposite of Hashem. So this was a quality of Esav. And this came because he was drawn into this world. And he represented the physical world detached from the spiritual world. Then it states, he was an Ish Sodeh, a man of the field. This means he was a man of this world. And also, Rashi tells us, what does it mean, a man of the field? Odom Bottle, Vitsudei Bekashtei Chayes Ve'efis. He was a person who was not too productive. He used to like to spend a lot of time in the field as an autumn bottle, as a person who has nothing to do. He was a person of great leisure, and he would spend his time hunting. What is that? That is what is known as Hevel Havolim. Shlema HaMelech, King Solomon said, Hevel Havolim. That this world is Hevel Havolim, which means it's total emptiness and insignificant. What did Shlema mean? So the Gemara tells us he meant that if you take this world and detach it from the next world, if you take the physical world and detach it from the spiritual world, then this world has no value. It's Hevel Havolim, it's empty. It's a waste of time. And people who spend their time hunting, fox hunting, horse racing, in the fields, they seek leisure and recreation. This is Hevel Havolim. And this was this world. This is what is banned. Ish Sodeh. He was a hunter in the field, Ish Botel. He had plenty of time. He didn't have more important things to do. And also the fact that when he was born, Kulaseya Kaderes, he was like a garment, all finished. Hair is one of the last things that comes, and he was all finished. This also showed that he was close to this world. Physically, he was finished, complete. These were the qualities of Esav. Yaakov, now it states, Yaakov, the Torah tells us, Ish Tom was an upright person. What does Tom mean? So Rashi says Tom means the exact opposite of duplicity. Eino boki b'chol eile. He doesn't know how to deceive. Doesn't know how to flatter. Ki libei kein piv. Whatever is in his heart, that he's a double entity. There's the entity of the world of speech, and there's the entity of the world of action or the world of truth. So he's choluk, he's a double personality. The tam, the word tam comes from the word sholim. Sholim means it's complete. He's a single entity. Kipiv kein belibay. Whatever he says, that's in his heart. He doesn't know how to deceive. This was Yaakov. Where did Yaakov get this quality from? because Yaakov was the Baal Elam Habo. Yaakov was the master of the spiritual world. The spiritual world is not the physical world. The spiritual world is a single entity, not a double entity. And this was Yaakov. The sages tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created this world with the hay of his name. And the spiritual world he created with the yud of his name. Now this world he created with the hay, because a hay is made up of a dalet and a yud. If you draw a dalet and you draw a yud, you have a hay. Now the dalet represents the physical world, because that represents a physical direction, a physical matter. It's a line drawn horizontally and a line drawn vertically. So this represents physical matter. That's the physical world. The yud, which he created the spiritual world with, this represents a spiritual world, a world that has no physical matter in it. Because the yud is just a nakuda, is just a dot. Even if you just draw a dot, that qualifies for a yud. And therefore, there's no physical matter in a nakuda, in a point. Therefore, that represents the spiritual world. Why is there also a yud in the hay, which the world, the physical world, was created with? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu created both worlds to work as a team, to work one with the other. And then there's perfection. But if you separate one world from the other, then you're left just with the Dalet and without the Yud. This was Esav. Yaakov, on the other hand, that represented the great qualities of the spiritual world, which was the Yud, a Yud cannot be divided. If you'll take a yud and you'll cut it in half, you'll still have a yud. And if you cut it in half again, it will still be a yud. A yud can never be divided. In other words, it's just contrary to the whole concept of duplicity, of Hanifa. Because the yud represents the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu can never be divided into two entities. He is the perfection of a single entity. It's very deep thoughts here. But therefore, Esau, that became the master of this world and sunk into the depths of this world, independent of the next world. So he became a master of deception and of lies and of duplicity. Yaakov, who represented the next world, Ishtom, Kelibay came with Eve. He was one single entity. He could not distort. And therefore, Ishtam. And then the Torah tells us, Yesheva Olim. He dwelled in the tents. This teaches us two things. Firstly, it states, Oholim in the tents, Ola Shel Shem Ola Shel Eber. He was the master of Torah. Of Shem Ve'ever, who had yeshivas. And that's the quality of Torah, because the quality of Torah's emes is truth. And it states, Torah's Hashem Tamima. Torah is complete, is one. There cannot be two Torahs. There's only one Devar Hashem. Secondly, why does it use the word Ohel? Why doesn't, an ohel is a tent, why doesn't it use a word, bais, a house, or palterim, a palace? This represented that Yaakov was not that interested in worldly things. By him a tent was sufficient. Tents are usually places of dwelling which are moved from one place to the other. That means that this world was not Yaakov's place. The one who dwelled in great homes and palaces, this was Esau.
because this world was his. Yaakov's world was the next world. This was the quality of Yaakov Avinu. Vayeav Yitzchok es Esav kitzai befiv v'rivka eves es Yaakov. Yitzchok loved Esav kitzai befiv because he became humped in the mouth of Esav. He was distorted, he was deceived by Esav's distortions and his duplicity. But Rivka loved Yaakov. Rivka saw through this. Why did Rivka see through this? We could say two reasons. One reason could be, the Chazal tell us, Bina Yeseira, an extra dimension of understanding was given to women, where even things that we cannot understand logically, women are capable of understanding. Because of the Bina Yeseira, when it states, Vayiven Asatzela, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu built the river, the side of Adam, states he gave her, Chava, an extra dimension of understanding. Things that cannot be comprehended logically, they can still understand. So therefore, Yitzchok went with Seichel, with logic. And because of this logic, he could not see through this tremendous smoke screen of Esav. But Rivka, through intuition, saw through it, and she saw that it was all one great distortion and bluff, and therefore she loved Yaakov. Secondly, Rivka had a prophecy. Rivka was a prophetess, Ruach HaKodesh, and in many ways we see the mothers were greater in Nevuah than even the forefathers. By Sora we see it, because Sora chased away Yishmael, and she said, Lo yirazeim b'ni, he will not inherit with my son. She saw that the Yerusha, the inheritance, could not go through Yishmael, and Avraham was against this, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Shema b'keilo, listen to her. And Rivka also had this extra degree of prophecy, that the Nevuah came to her, but Av Yaveh Desoir, that the older one will eventually serve the younger one. So she had a prophecy, and that Yitzchok did not have, that Esav would eventually fall to Yaakov. Yaakov will be the greater. Now, these powers of Esav are not to be taken lightly. These powers, as mentioned, were of gigantic magnitude. The Medrash tells us in Bereishis, Parshas Beis, Osei, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world was tohu. There were four imperfections that came about in the world. One was tohu, an emptiness; vohu, a confusion; cheshech, a darkness; and tahom, endless depths. When he created the world, he created it perfect. But because of the imperfection of man, it was not accepted to be perfect. And therefore, these four imperfections came about in the creation. And they manifested themselves in four great kingdoms that were to rise in the world. The Medrash tells us, what were they? The Shimon Melokish Posakro B'Malchiyos. Tohu, the imperfection of emptiness, Zumalchus Bovil. This was the Babylonian Empire. Vohu, of confusion, Zumalchus Modai. This was the Syrian Persian Empire, that of Ahasuerus. Cheshech, darkness, zu Malchus Shobon. This was the great ancient Greek empire. Cheshech, Tahom, endless depth, zu Malchus Harashor, zu Malchus Harvis. This was the fourth empire, the empire of Esav, of Edom, of Rome. And then the Medrash tells us, Ma tahom shein lo cheker, just like the depths, has no end to it. A person cannot comprehend the end. So is it with this Malchus. This will be greater and stronger than all of the three other empires. And each one that was created with tremendous abilities to bring perfection in an aspect in this world and to bring kovet, honor to the king of the world, used it against him. Each one rose up against Klal Yisrael, that is the that are the representatives of Hashem in this world. Nebuchadnezzar and Babel rose up to destroy the Beis Hamikdash. Achashverosh with Mordechai rose up to destroy Klal Yisrael. Yovan rose up against the Beis Hamikdash. And Malchus Arvis, Edom, the Roman Empire, destroyed the Beis Hamikdash. And they will be greater than all of the other three. So we see how far reaching these abilities were. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Avodah Zarah, we have brought this before and gone through at length, but there's not time to go through at length, so let us just quote one or two things from them. Masechet Avodah Zarah, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. The Gemara says, Omer of Yehuda Mashmul, Eir Acheres Yesh Lehem Beremi. There's another great holiday that was celebrated in Rome. In Achas Leshivim Shona, once every 70 years, Mevin Odom Sholem, they would bring a strong, perfect person, Umarkivin Eisela Odom Chiger, and they would put him on the shoulders of a crippled person. Rashi tells us that this strong, perfect person, this represented Esav, because Esav was the Baal Eilam Hazeh, the physical world. The crippled person, this represented Yaakov, because when Yaakov fought with the angel, and that was Sodeshel Esav, sages tell us that was the angel of Esav, so Yaakov was wounded in the leg. Umalbishin Isai Bigde Oda Marishan. On the perfect person, they would dress him up. This was a holiday that they had once, a great festival that they would have once every 70 years. They dressed him up in the clothing of Oda Marishan, the clothing which HaKadosh Baruch Hu made for the first man. Rashi tells us, Hain bigde chamuda ishoyele Esav. These were the bigde chamuda ishoyele Esav. When Yaakov told his mother, "How can I go to my father? He'll recognize that I'm not Esav." So his mother said, "Don't worry. First of all, I'll cover your arms with skin of animals. Secondly, I'll give you Esav's clothing." So it states that she took the Bigdei Chamudeis, the precious clothing from Esav, and she dressed up Yaakov in his clothing. What were the clothing doing by her? So Rashi brings, because Esav didn't trust his wives, so he kept the clothing by his mother. It's a question. He kept all his clothing by his mother. Was he worried about that his wives would steal his suits? No. This was not regular clothing. This was Bigdei Chamudeis. These were the clothing of Odom Arishon. The clothing which HaKadosh Baruch Hu made for Odom Arishon, this is what Esav had. And the Gemara says they were called Bigde Hamude Shechomdu Minim Nimrod, because Esav stole them. Eventually they ended up by Nimrod, and Esav killed Nimrod. It was on that day when he came and he asked, he was fatigued, and he asked for something to eat. On that day he killed Nimrod. And when he killed Nimrod, he took the clothing. And these clothing he was very careful with. They were priceless. So these clothing were kept. Now they ended up by the Romans, because they were his heirs. So they would put this clothing on this person. Then the Gemara tells us, Ma umenichen lebereshe karkifla shoreb Ishmael. They would put on his head a mask which was made from the skin of Rabbi Shmuel Kain Godel. Rabbi Shmuel was a Kain Godel. Ume aruge malchus hoyo. And when the Romans brought Shmad, when they would decree that all of the Jews must Shmad themselves and they must stop learning Torah, and Rabbi Kiva and the others said, no, we will not stop teaching Torah, we will not stop learning Torah. So they killed them. So when they came to kill Rabbi Shmuel, Miteich Yofyoi, he was very, very beautiful. Nichnas Belev Bas Kesar, the daughter of the Caesar, fell in love with him. So they said, we will still kill him, but Vihivshid Or Ponim, we will take off the skin of his face, and you can preserve it. Vechontu Be'efer Da'atashman, and they embalmed it. So it will retain its same beauty and same form. And Rashi tells us it is still concealed in the treasures, in the concealed treasures of Rome. So they would take this mask and they would put this on the person. And they would take a chain made out of a beautiful stone which was called Pisa, and it weighed, its weight was the weight of 200 zuz. Rashi brings that this stone, Tosfos brings that this stone is very rare, and this represented almost 100% of this type of stone in this world. And they would hang it around his neck. It's a stone of tremendous value, and it's not found in the entire world. And then the streets where they would, this festival would take place, they would cover it with other types of jewels. And this is the festival they would have. Umachris in the form of Sach Kiri Plaster. And they would carry on with their festival. Now we see, Mara brings in the Sefer Nechtzich Israel four things. Firstly, the clothing of Adam Arishon. They would clothe him in the clothing of Adam Arishon. Secondly, they would take the mask of the beauty of Rabbi Shmuel Kain Godel. Thirdly, they would put a necklace of the most precious stones in the world around his neck. And fourthly, they would cover the streets with jewels. Now this represented these qualities. Adam Arishon, the first man, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created him, Betzelem Elokim, in the image, in his image. This means he gave him a gigantic spirit. And then also, it states that he gave him Kovid V'Hodor Ta'atrehu. Tilim Ches, it states Kovid V'Hodor Ta'atrehu. He ornamented him with great honor and beauty. The spirit of Adam Arishon, Yaakov inherited. And Yaakov became the greatest in the Tzelem Elohim, in the image of Hashem. And that's why it states in Bob Metzia and Daf Pei Dalet, it states, Shufra de Yaakov, ki Shufra de Odom Arishon. The radiance of the face of Yaakov was equal to the radiance of Odom Arishon, of the first man. Because he inherited the Tzelem, the image, the spiritual image. And that's why it states that the Tzura shel Yaakov, the image of Yaakov, is hewed on the Kisei HaKovod, on the throne of the Almighty. He rose to the ultimate perfection of the Spirit. Esav, he inherited the physical entity of Adam HaRishon. What was the physical entity of Adam HaRishon? The Bigdei Chamudos, his clothing. Clothing represents honor. Rabbi Yechanan says in Masechta Shabbos that he always referred to his clothing as Machpadesai, as my honor, because clothing is what honors a person. Secondly, the mask of Rabbi Shmuel Kain Godel. Rabbi Shmuel was extremely handsome and beautiful. That beauty came from the Beis HaMikdash, from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. The Kain Godel would go into the most holiest places of the Beis HaMikdash. They cut the skin off, preserved it as a mask, and would wear it. What kind of beauty is that? That's the exterior beauty. Shlema HaMelech said, Hevel HaYefi. Beauty is empty, is insignificant. Why? Because you can have someone that's very beautiful, but it's just exterior. Beauty is merely exterior. How do you know what's inside? We only know what's outside. When Rabbi Shmuel Kain Godel had this beauty, then it was Isha Yiras Hashem Hitisalo. The Gaon writes, Hevel HaYefi V'Sheker Achein. Beauty is empty because it's exterior. Chein, grace and charm, is sheker because it's deceitful. You can deceive with it. But Isha Yiras Hashem, Hitisalo. But the one who fears Hashem, then Hitisalo, then it gives greatness and significance to everything, to beauty and to charm. If someone is beautiful and also fears Hashem, is righteous, then the beauty radiates from the righteousness. That was Rabbi Shmuel Kain Godel. But if it's merely beauty of the exterior, then it's hevel. They cut it off, the exterior beauty, and they put on a mask. We have this beauty. Two things we see. This is the hevel of Esav, and it was stolen. Ula'im ilayim yemot. One will steal from the other. They took it from Klal Yisrael. And this world is hevel ayefi. The beauty of this world, if it's divorced from the spiritual world, hevel, it's empty. That's what Shlema HaMelech said in Kehelis. If it represents the spiritual world, then it represents the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if it's divorced from the spiritual world, then it's empty. Very interesting note, which I've mentioned many times, that historians write that a basic difference they found between the Greek monuments and buildings and the Roman monuments and buildings. The Greeks were perfectionists. They were Balei Chochma. They were the fathers of wisdom, of secular wisdom. And when they built something out of marble, it was pure marble. They built something out of gold, it was pure gold. When they examined the Roman buildings, which tried to emulate the Greeks, their Greek predecessors. They found that it was made out of stone, merely with a marble covering. Or if it was made out of stone, merely with a gold covering. And this was the Hevel Avelim of this world, of Esau. That's the second. Third was, they placed a necklace of rare, precious jewels. Now, the Gemara always tells us that there's begodim, there are garments, which brings honor to a person, and then there's tachshitin, ornaments. Jewelry represents another dimension. Jewelry represents a degree of honor and royalty. There's always what is known as the crown jewels. Rare and priceless jewels. This is not only worn for beauty, but being that it's priceless, this gives another dimension. This gives a further dimension of honor. And this is what Esau wanted. Because honor is what is projected to another person. Honor, this type of honor is mibachutz, is exterior. And then the fourth was that they spread jewels over their streets. This represented their mokum, their places. They were very concerned about their places, about their palaces, and about their castles, and about their cities. We find this with the Romans. The Gemara tells us that they had built beautiful cities, and they built beautiful markets, and beautiful luxurious baths, and beautiful sports arenas. This was the Roman Empire. And one further point. At 40 years old, when Esau married, and Rashi brings that all of his years he would go and steal women away from their husbands, and now he made himself off to be a great tzaddik. My father married at 40, therefore I also will marry at 40. So Rashi brings the posuk from Tehillim Pei, Yechasemenu Chazir Miyar, that a chazir, a swine, who eats and comes in from the woods, from the forest, Zu Esav. This represents Esav. Esav was symbolized by the chazir. Now, there's something very profound here. When we speak of the chazir, the swine, this is the filthiest of all animals. Of all of the animals, the swine is the filthiest. And we find a degree of kovod, of honor, even by animals. The Gemara brings in Hagigo that animals also have a degree of kovod. The eagle is a king, he flies higher than anyone else. The lion wants to be a king. The bull wants to be a king. The animal which lacks the greatest dignity and greatest honor is the chazir. He will go right into the rubbish for his food. There is no limitation. This is the chazir. If Esau was supposed to be such a great nation and with such nobility and aristocracy, why did Chazal say Zu Chazir? So it tells us because HaChazir Kishuhu Sheichev Peshet Tlofer. All animals, usually when they sit, they put their hoofs beneath them. The Chazir, when he sits, he makes sure to put his hoofs outward. Why? Because there are two kosher symbols of an animal. One is that he must have split hoofs, and the other that he must be malegero, he must chew his gut, redigest his food. All animals, all teva animals, that do not have both of these symbols, then, if they have only one, the Torah brings, then they redigest their food, but they do not have split hoofs. The chazir is just the opposite. He has split hoofs, but he does not redigest his food. So this means each one has a sign mibachutz and a sign mibifnim, an exterior symbol and an interior symbol. The chewing of one's cud, that is not recognizable. The hoofs are recognizable. All other animals, if they're kosher, if they're treif, you can see their treif. The chazir is treif as can be, the filthiest animal that can be, the lowliest animal that can be. There's no animal that's as filthy and lowly and lacks dignity as the chazir. Yet he's the only animal that tells people, look, I am kosher. He sits with his hoofs out to tell the people, Leimer, Ru'u, see, Shani Tohar, I am Tohar. Zu Esav. This is Esav and his children. Kachelu Gezli Mechem Simu Marimats Mksherim. They steal and they take what is not theirs, and they take women that are not theirs. And at the same time, they tell the world, look, I am Tohar, I am righteous. And there's a Medrash that states, Medrash in Vayikra Rabba, Yud Gimel Hei, it's on that posuk where it brings four animals, that there's the camel and the rabbit and another animal called the shofan, which is a small animal, a coney, and the chazir and the swine. And these are the four non-kosher animals that the Torah gives us as an example. And the other three, they don't have split hoofs, but they're malagero. They re-chew their cud. So we can tell their treif, because they don't have split hoofs. But the chazir has split hoofs, but he doesn't chew his cud. So the Medrash says, the gamel, the camel that represents Bovel. And Bovel, Nebuchadnezzar, finally at one time praised Hashem. He praised Hashem. The shofon, which is this coney, this represents Poras. And Kadesh, Cyrus, the king of Poras, praised HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why both of these are Malagero. Malagero means that they praised HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Daraneves, which represents the rabbit, which is the rabbit, this represents the Greek Empire. And Alexandros Mugdon, Alexander the Great, Ki Avichamil Reb Shimon HaTzadik, when he saw Reb Shimon HaTzadik, he said, Boruch Hashem Elokei Shel Shimon HaTzadik. He would say, blessed is the God of Shimon HaTzadik. He praised HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this means that even though they were great Rishoy, they were very evil people, but still they praised HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does that mean? That these animals, even though they're treif, but still they have some type of bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's some good in them also. But the Chazir, Zu Edom, this was Esav's nation. Geira lo yogur. Not only they don't praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, b'mecharefes u'magadefes, but they cursed HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They said, Mili bashomoyim, who is in the heaven? This means that the Chazir, not only does he show himself to be Tohar, but at the same time, there is no good in him whatsoever. There's no bond in him whatsoever between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he is the lowest of all of the animals. This is Esav. Now one might ask, how is it? How is it that if we say Esav had such beauty, such physical wealth, and such physical nobility, and all of these things that we mentioned, we can compare him to a chazir, where the chazir, the Gemara says, Nezem Zov Biav Chazir. It's like a golden ring in the nose of a chazir, that he'll use it to go into the most filthiest places. This is what we must realize is the duplicity of Esav. Esav represented this world divorced from the next world, divorced from the spiritual world. This world divorced from the spiritual world can be the lowest entity, yet at the same time look the most beautiful. And this was Esav, and he was a master of this. He represented kovod, honor, hodor, beauty, yokor, wealth, dignity, gigantic powers, gigantic civilizations, beautiful places. This is what he represented. But still he was the chazir that said, see, I am tohor, and then sink to the greatest and greatest depths. This is why Yitzchok was deceived. Because of these gigantic powers, Yitzchok was deceived. He saw in him the great powers that he had, the great potential. But because of this deception, he was deceived. And a second reason, Esav was the Bechor, he was the firstborn. And he knew that the Brocha should go to the firstborn. Therefore he was deceived, and therefore he was prepared to give him the Brochas. When Yaakov came and stole the Brochas, and then when Esav realized, when Yitzchok realized what had happened, by Yecharad Charod Gedelad Miod, he trembled with a great fear. Ro Pischo Shel Gehenim, Gehenim opened up in front of him. And Rashi brings from Medrash Tanchuma. Why? He said, I thought that I gave the brochas to the wrong person, because of Arti Al Shuris Hadin, according to the Din, I had to give to the firstborn, and especially that I had such a firstborn like Esav. And he thought that he had brought the brochas of Avraham Avinu to ruination. That's why there was this great charodo. And then Yaakov said, then when Esav came and he told him what happened, Yitzchok told him what happened, so Esav said, now I know why they called him Yaakov. Shepamayim Yakveni. Twice has he tripped me by the heel. And Yitzchok said, twice? Yes, he said. First he stole my Becherosi, my firstborn right, and now he stole my brochas. Yitzchok heard he stole your first birthright, and he asked him what happened, and he said, well, I sold it to him. Then he said, Gam Boruch Hiya, let him be blessed then, because now I know that I was deceived. I didn't give it to the Bechor. You were not the Bechor. I gave it to the rightful Bechor. So let him be blessed. And then when Esav said, but don't you have brochas left for me? He gave him the brocha al charbechot tichya, that you shall live by the sword. Because if you recall, when Esav was born, it states he was Edom, he was red. And that's a sign of shvichas domim, of bloodshed. How did Yitzchok understand this? So he understood it, that it would be bloodshed of mitzvah. There's times when there can be bloodshed of mitzvah also. Milchamas mitzvahs, wars of mitzvah. But now when he realized that he had given the brochas to the rightful one, and the tzaddik was Yaakov and not Esav, he realized that this would be shvichas domim. And therefore he told them, Archabechotichia, you shall live by the sword. What does this leave for us? of all of the four Malchuyos, the four empires, the one that we contend with mostly now is the empire of Esav. Chazal tell us that each empire ate up the previous one. Babel rose up against Israel, and eventually they were destroyed by the Persian Empire. The Persian Empire rose up against Israel, and eventually they were destroyed by the Greek Empire. The Greek Empire rose up against Israel, and eventually they were destroyed by the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire, we still live in that golus, in that exile. The Medrash says, "Veruach Hashem." After it states, "Tehu v'vayu v'cheshech al pnei atehim veruach Hashem merachepes al pnei amoyim." And the Spirit of Hashem hovers over the water. What does that represent? That represents the final milchoma, the war of Esav against the Ruach Hashem Zumelech HaMashiach. The Melech HaMashiach will be the only one that will be able to destroy Edom. The Medrash tells us that when Yaakov fell asleep and he dreamt and he saw a ladder going up and down, and angels were going up and down, so the Medrash says that he saw the four empires. And each empire he saw go up to a certain step and then fall. And when the fourth empire came along, he saw them go up and he never saw them fall. And he became afraid. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, "Don't worry, your seed shall bring them down also." This means that so high did they go that even Yaakov could not see where their downfall would be. And this is the 2,000 years that we're still in the Golus of Edom, the exile of the Roman Empire. The Chazal tell us that we are still living in that Golus, and they are still the empire. Except they were divided and subdivided. Because so powerful they would have been, and so destructive they would have been, because the Chazal say Al Charbechot, steel represents destruction. And so destructive they would have been, that had they not been divided and subdivided, they would have destroyed the world. And what civilizations came from Rome? Modern civilization is the child of Rome. The European nations, these are the heirs of the Roman Empire. There was Germany, there was France, there was England, there was the Roman Catholic Church. All of these represented great beauty and great righteousness and great nobility. The fact is, the distortion is so great that who would even be able to speak against the French nation with their wonderful beauty and their charm and their scholarship? Or the great civilization of the Germans? Or the English Empire that the sun has never set over, that brought a new light of civilization and humanity to the world? Or the Roman Catholic Church that became the spokesman of righteousness and piety and religion for the world? And at the same time, we saw what the Germans did. World War One, World War Two. The French, if you read behind the lines of history, you see what they did. The English massacred Jews 1,000 years ago and massacred Jews during the time of the Mandate and in 1948. the Roman Catholic Church, brought blood like rivers during the time of the Crusades and collaborated with Hitler of the massacre of 6 million Jews. This is all Esav. Zuhazir. This is what our Chazal tell us. The ultimate of deception and duplicity. To project, Ru'u, siya, ani tohor. To project the utmost of beauty and of charm and of civilization and of wealth. The Gemara brings, the Romans were the ones who established, they take claim for establishing a court system, a civilization. They brought civilization to the world because the other people were pagans. But that they had their gladiators and their armies and their thousands or hundreds of thousands of slaves, so they could be the Ishbosheth, or that all of the courts of Europe inherited that after that. We have the Russian Tsars also. That was civilization by them. That was humanity. The Gemara brings that a Roman judge was speaking to another colleague, and he said that I sentenced 3 men today to death. One for murder, and one, I believe it was for stealing, and one for adultery. And then he whispered to his colleague, because of Rivka's fast thinking and her great determination that Yaakov came and inherited the brochas, and the brochas of Avraham Avinu went to Yaakov, who forever was destined to be the arch enemy of Esav. And Esav would spread his wings throughout the entire world until the Ruach Hashem Rachefes al Pnei Amoyim Zu Melech HaMashiach. When the Melech HaMashiach comes, he alone will be able to destroy this empire. The Gemara says, B'schus HaMayim, B'schus HaTshuva. Klal Yisrael will be shov to Hashem. They will return to Hashem. Then the Melech HaMashiach will come and bring the empire of Yaakov back, that Yerushalayim will be rebuilt, the Gemara says, when the walls of Rome will crumble. We should all be zeche to see that b'mheiro v'yomeinu.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.